This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Until becoming mayor of Chicago last year, Lori Lightfoot had never held elected office, but she'd served as a prosecutor and spent nearly a decade working on police reform. Now she's contending with civil unrest over police violence, and at the same time, the President of the United States is constantly attacking her for the city's homicide and gun violence rates. Last week, Donald Trump announced that he's sending to Chicago 200 federal agents. You have the hardest job in America, maybe. They used to say that about New York City.
Being a big city mayor is tough no matter where you sit.
I can't imagine. So let's begin. President Trump recently announced that he was sending 200 federal agents to Chicago to do what he called fight crime. Were you involved in that decision?
No. You know, the president frequently says things that may or may not actually be accurate. What hasn't happened yet, but I anticipate happening, is additional resources to the FBI, DEA, ATF, to really plug into existing criminal investigations around guns, gangs, and violent crime. And unlike what happened in Portland, I think the circumstances are different despite the rhetorical flourishes that come from the president and others in his administration.
It sounds like you welcome the help from President Trump.
Well, I don't think of it as help from President Trump, because there's a lot of things that the president could do, which he refuses to do. And I get it, I suppose. But our biggest driver of violence is handguns. Every single year, our police department seizes more illegal guns than New York City or LA. And that's a massive number. And the reason is we're surrounded by other jurisdictions that have very lax gun laws. And if the president really wanted to do something that would be a game changer, do something around that. Do something about assault weapons. Empower the ATF to truly regulate federally licensed gun dealers. There's a number of things that the federal government is uniquely qualified to do that he refuses to do that would actually make a difference in a city like Chicago.
Have you had a chance to express that to him, and what kind of response do you get?
I have done that in two ways. I wrote a letter and sent that with no response. And out of the blue, he called me and I expressed the same thing there. Not interested. And look, I think we're all smart enough to see what's going on. The president's in the political fight of his life. He is borrowing from the 1968 playbook of Richard Nixon to scare the white people into thinking that cities are dangerous and that he's the law and order president. But obviously the whole country is very, very different now than it was back then. So it's just that the tactic is just not going to work.
Well, what is the president trying to do when he says things like this? As recently as 2 weeks ago, he called the violence in Chicago worse than Afghanistan. And he said that's worse than any war zone that we're in by a lot, which is, of course, untrue. Yes. Why is he so focused on Chicago, and what is that rhetoric all about?
You know, I can't explain why he's so focused on Chicago, particularly because he has one of his signature properties here. And ironically, if you look at the advertising for the Trump Hotel and apartments, it describes Chicago in the most glowing, pristine terms.
You're not suggesting he's hypocritical in any way, are you?
Oh, well, you know, just a tad. But, you know, look, I think part of what he's doing, if you look at the cities where he's really been hitting the hardest, well, first of all, they're all Democratic cities, and most of the cities are cities run by Democratic women, whether it's me here in Chicago, Keisha Lance Bottoms in Atlanta, Mira Bowser in Washington, D.C., Jenny Durkin in Seattle. That's not a coincidence.
And it says what to you?
Well, I think it underscores his utter disrespect for women, particularly powerful women who are actually getting things done on behalf of their residents. He thinks we're easy, and he's picked the wrong group of women to try to muscle. We're all tough.
There's been an upswell in demand, as you well know, to defund the police. What does that term mean to you? What's your response to that?
To me, what it really means is this. In a city like Chicago, where huge portions of Black and Brown communities have seen so little investment, really in decades, what people are saying is they want some equity. They don't want 50% of the city budget spent on policing. They want a more proportionate share of those money spent on things like affordable housing, things like closing the healthcare gap, mental health services, job training, the list goes on. And I agree with that. The challenge is that because historically governments have spent increasingly less money on the so-called social safety net and in investments in Black and Brown neighborhoods, the police have been put in, I think, an untenable position where they're called upon to service calls for service on issues for which they are never going to be properly situated. So I hope one of the things that comes out of this conversation that we're in, both locally and nationally, is a real discussion about what is the proper role of the police. What's the job description?
What do you think is the ideal role for the police in practical terms?
Look, first of all, the police have to continue to build authentic relationships with the residents that they serve. They've got to get out of their cars. They've got to be seen as people and not just some dude behind a cruiser with a gun and a badge.
When you say that, does the leadership of the Chicago Police Department resist that?
No. We have a very different set of circumstances here than, for example, what has been written about in your magazine regarding New York, for example. And we're in a very different place.
Because the union here, the police union, is so conservative. It's hardly a reformist union, and they resist these kinds of reforms. I'm talking about New York now.
Yeah. Look, I don't know of a union across the country that embraces reform. I think that's a bitter pill for them to swallow. But obviously, there's degrees on a spectrum. I think New York is probably in the most extreme, and Chicago is probably somewhere in the middle.
Now, the Department of Justice found that Chicago police use force almost 10 times more on Black people than white people. We've also seen evidence that the department essentially ran a torture program targeting Black men for decades up until the early 90s. Is the Chicago Police Department a racist institution?
I think that people believe it's racist. In the aftermath, I certainly think that police officers are the product of the neighborhoods in which they're raised. Chicago is a deeply segregated city. It's not infrequent that officers will grow up in an environment where they nobody who looks different than them. That's how segregated our city is, unfortunately. And then when they get into the academy, they're oftentimes meeting people who are different than them for the very first time as peers. And so I think the missed opportunity that would start to address the racism is to take that head on in recruit classes and call it what it is. Now, we have reinstituted procedural justice, unconscious bias training, but I think we've got to go deeper than what we have done so far. And I'm pushing the police department to do that because the practical reality is we live in a time and in a place and in a city where racism is real.
Now, we had an interview scheduled yesterday. We're talking on a Wednesday. We're supposed to talk on a Tuesday. And you postponed for reasons that we don't know, but I think became very clear. A deputy chief, Dion Boyd, committed suicide in his office. The Chicago Police Department has an unusually high rate of suicide. What are the stressors that these officers are facing right now? What are you hearing from officers on the ground?
Well, look, I think that this is probably one of the most difficult times to be a policeman, certainly in modern time, if not ever. Police officers are human. They're our neighbors. They live in our communities. There's no doubt in my mind, based upon conversations I've had with officers of every rank, that they feel under siege. They don't feel supported. They don't think that the city has their back. I don't think that's true, but it's certainly understandable.
If I might, what is your understanding of what kind of pressures led Dion Boyd, Deputy Chief Boyd, to commit suicide?
I don't really know that. And the little that I know, I think I should keep to myself. I had a respect for him and his children. He was a beloved figure within a department. And I did postpone our interview because I really needed to be present.
Of course.
I addressed a roll call yesterday in the deputy chief's old district where he was a commander. I walked in and there wasn't a dry eye. You know, grown men were weeping. And I've said, and I don't mind saying it here, that we have to do a better job of making sure we're supporting officer wellness. You know, there's a saying that hurt people hurt people. And that's usually said in the context of victims of domestic violence or child abuse. They go on to be abusers. But the practical reality is, if you're not well, given the level of trauma that police officers experience every single day, the burdens that they carry when they meet people on their worst day. And there's a lot of, I think, concern on the part of officers if they reach out for help, that they'll lose their licensing. We've got to demystify that and get our officers healthy and well. They're deserving of help.
I wonder, Mayor Lightfoot, considering the amount of anger at the police, mm-hmm. considering all the reality and supposition about the guilt of the police on certain incidents, many incidents, gun violence directed toward the populace, corruption, and all the rest, when you speak in these sympathetic ways about pressures on police officers, do you get pushback from ordinary people on the street, from the citizens of Chicago who face the police and see the police not quite so sympathetically, let's say?
Of course I do. I'm sure there are people that have heard me say it and will listen to this and think, she's out of touch. She doesn't know what she's talking about. How can she say that in this time? But I know it to be true. There are men and women out there who are police officers who are still on the job for the right reasons because they really want to make a difference in the quality of life for their neighbors. And that is just the truth. Now, there are clearly some, and I spent my life around police accountability, there are some who have absolutely forfeited the right and the honor to be a policeman. And those are the people that we need to focus our attention on. But we also have to think institutionally and culturally, what is it about our police departments across the country, and Chicago's no different, that breeds or attracts those kinds of individuals? And that's, I think, where the hard work has to be done. I'm a Black woman in the United States. I'm the daughter of two people who were born in the 1920s in the segregated South and suffered every conceivable indignity that you could suffer as a poor Black person. So I get it. And I understand profoundly how police departments have been used as the tip of a spear of a racist institutions and governments who fought tooth and nail to oppress us. So I get it. I absolutely do.
Mayor Lightfoot, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lori Lightfoot is the mayor of Chicago. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.